Good morning. Today is Monday, October the 23rd. Joining us this morning from the California Highway Patrol out of the Arcata office is Victor Aguilar.
Good morning.
Victor is in charge of, I'm going to say you're in charge of,
yeah,
recruitment.
Yeah, let's do that.
And he's also the investigator for the California Highway Patrol out of the swamp office.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Our quote this morning comes from, Dogen. Okay. Do not think you will necessarily be aware of your own enlightenment when it occurs. Not a little existential, but it's foggy enough this morning, so perhaps that counts. What is the biggest challenge with investigations? I mean, a lot of us, you know, we'll see skid marks. We'll see some pictures, maybe some white stuff left over from the flares. Okay, fine. Yeah. Beyond that, what is it that you do? What is the information that is needed for a situation to be adjudicated properly?
Well, you know, for us at the California Highway Patrol, there's two main, I guess, groups that evidence or things that are left behind after an incident occurs. You know, there's the real obvious things, like you mentioned, the tire friction marks, maybe something that came out of a human being, blood, things like that. Those are kind of readily identifiable. Usually they're readily attributable to something. But then you have the other set of things, which are the more nuanced things, right, where it takes some experience, some training to kind of see past what might be even be at like face value to get it to the core of what really, really occurred, right? Because sometimes you don't have things like the luxury of witnesses. Sometimes you don't have the luxury of people with clear recollections, and so you have to kind of like suss out what's of value, what is true evidence, and what does all this mean, so that you as an officer can do obviously the best job you can do to write a report that can stand up to the scrutiny of a potential court case.
So what are some of the easy things that you look for? Let's say it's not a whose fault it was, but let's say there was a crash and you're trying to figure out, okay, what led up to this? And we certainly have had plenty of opportunities for you to put your skill set to work in the last year and a half. It's like everybody's going crazy.
Right.
What do you, if it's not the skid marks really giving you clues, what other physical stuff do you try to look at first time through a scene?
Yeah. Well, you know, the nice thing about the physical stuff is it's not a human being. So some of like opinions don't matter to a tire, right? So where it lands, it lands. What it does, it does. Certain laws of physics that a tire or a car or a tree, you know, they play along with those rules very well. So those things, we like those things because there's not a lot of debate. There's not a lot of opinion.
How do you tell how fast a vehicle is going?
Now that gets into something a little more above my expertise level. There is a mathematical equation that you can use for the length of a tire friction mark. Yeah, you can determine speed if you know some certain factors, right? Like if you know, let's say, what vehicle the tire friction mark was made by. Direction of travel, and then the type of roadway you're working with, right?
Can you tell what direction? Is it somebody peeling out or somebody slamming on the brakes going? You can just a quick, oh, yeah, they were leaving instead of
arriving. Those type of marks look very different from each other. One you have where the weight is transferring to the back because you're propelling the car, and one you have the weight transferring to the front because you're stopping the car.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is Memory Making Music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 824. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Victor Aguilar from the California Highway Patrol. He's the guy that comes out and tries to put the pieces back together again to see what's going on.
To a degree, we do.
It's intriguing to me, Victor, looking at this from the outside in. Mm-hmm. It's like a puzzle.
Yeah, it is.
I love puzzles.
Right.
I mean, so it's, but I know that I have all the pieces.
Right.
You never know you have all the pieces, so it's a little bit more challenging.
It can be, definitely,
For your situation. We were talking about traction marks or skid marks or whatever mm-hmm. we want to call these, rubber on the road,
right.
so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets off the road bed itself, so there's no gravel that's getting thrown around and it's right. not the asphalt. We're now into grass, trees, shrubs, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Easier? More challenging?
It can be easier. It can be more challenging. I know that's not really a definitive answer, but you know, so many of these things are situational. They really are. No two traffic collisions are alike. You have things and factors that are involved in it, such as the weight of the vehicle, how fresh are the tires, how fast are they traveling, what type of driver was behind the wheel, and what other factors, such as maybe inattention, sleeplessness, DUI, other factors that go into these things. And then you introduce these other things like geography, right? Is it a gravel roadway that they're running into? Is it dirt? Well, is it sandy loam soil? Is it blackberry bushes, right? So all these things kind of play a role into it. And that's why, you know, as a California Highway Patrol, we have to kind of look at the whole picture. We have to take the totality of the circumstances individualistically to kind of wrap our head around what actually occurred here. Some instances, you know, where it's just a person that went off the roadway, maybe they fell asleep, they're the only witness, the only, I guess, victim, and then you have a car. Sometimes those puzzles, right, are a little easier to put together because there's fewer pieces, and when we put the pieces that we do have together, they match up fairly well.
Then you kind of predictable.
Yeah, they are predictable, right? And then the person telling us what occurred matches up with what we're seeing as far as the physical evidence.
If it is something that's predictable, okay, I would think that your job is really tough because you want to use experience, mm-hmm. but you can't rely on experience.
Right.
That you allow yourself between the two.
You have to allow yourself to be wrong at times. You have to allow yourself to be proven wrong because, yeah, you assume things. We all know the old saying about.
That's why I use the word things. Presume.
Presume.
Doesn't presume. Quite work out the same way. So you kind of go in, if you see something, and typically it means this. Is that kind of your base reference, and then you deviate and come off of that? Or do you go in with a blank slate every time and have to, or want to, recreate from zero?
Right. Well, there's a nice thing about having this beautiful thing called experience, and a lot of it, right? We typically, during the course of a career of a CHP officer, can investigate hundreds and hundreds of collisions. And so you develop this database of knowledge, experience, training, and after a while, the odds become stacked in your favor because of all these things that you have and you've earned and have gained along the way. So that, yeah, your guess, which typically, you know, kind of follows the scientifically validated theory, right? You start with a theory, you test that theory, and then once it proves out to be correct or reliable, then suddenly we have this thing called law. We go along that similar trajectory. Fortunately, we get to interject a lot of our experience into those things to guess, you know, the most probable reason or outcome or condition for things that we see in front of us.
Do hybrid cars, are those game changers for you? Because I would think, I mean, you were talking about weight and speed and tire and wear and all these things that are, you know, if you're driving a 8,000 to 10,000 pound rig, mm-hmm. it can be a little bit different than these things that get impacted by a 5 mile an hour breeze.
Could be,
just different, or are they kind of all the same family? And it's,
yeah, me personally, I haven't noticed a difference in that. Granted, it's been a while since I investigated a traffic collision, but I never noticed a difference between those things because essentially, yeah, like you said, you're dealing with something very, very similar on four wheels. The same laws of physics apply to this thing, regardless of whether it's got an electric engine, combustible engine, four passengers, horse-drawn.
What other areas of investigation do you do? Most folks, I think, would say, well, okay, highway patrol, automotive related, speed related. What other things do you get a chance to apply your abilities to?
Yeah, well, certainly the vehicle code type investigations are absolutely the bread and butter, right? We do that thing daily, day out. But, you know, the Highway Patrol, the gamut that we run, we do all sorts of investigations across the state because we are a state agency. We're responsible for computer crimes. Someone commits a computer crime on state property. We investigate cargo thefts. We investigate human trafficking, labor trafficking, sex trafficking, all sorts of opportunities for us to use those investigative skills and the prowess that we've developed over years of doing these things.
As a state police.
As a state, yes. We're in the CHP officer
uniform. It's real simple in Oregon State Police.
Right.
You know, not Oregon Highway Patrol.
Right.
Oregon State Police. So
the
title is a little bit of a misnomer.
It is a misnomer. You know, and one of the reasons for that is we started as the California Highway Patrol, but when we adopted the state police back in 1996, all these other tasks that they were performing are now our tasks, but the name remained the same.
Just the badge weighs a little bit more. KINS, News and Information Times, 8:30. We'll be back with more.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Victor Aguilar from the California Highway Patrol / California State Police Department. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Victor, the other types of crimes. Now, you mentioned cargo. Well, mm-hmm. we don't have an awful lot of cargo here in the traditional forms. You know, the, mm-hmm. the shipping, not so much. So we have an awful lot of truck commercial hauling coming in and out of the county and through the county.
Right.
But they don't tend to originate from here unless, you know, it's the flower guys or, I guess, the marijuana guys, which is now probably putting a whole different spin on what your workload is going to look like starting January 1st.
Could be, yeah. Could be.
Has the state come out with any kind of references or ideas or thoughts or planning or training or anything regarding legal transportation?
You know what? I haven't been privy to any of that training. I know that when these things are implemented, our agency, because, again, we're responsible for the entire state of California, and one decision you make, let's say for Humboldt, it has to be homogeneous and carried out in San Diego County, San Francisco County, Kern County, wherever you might be, right? So because of that, sometimes we do the wait-and-see method. See where the needs are, see where the what is really occurring, where the trends are going.
Not weight as in poundage.
No.
Weight as in time reference.
Time reference.
You got me there for a sec. And that makes sense, too, because particularly with the marijuana stuff, county by county.
County by county, yeah, that's written into the law. You know, that a lot of the levels and allowable things are dictated at the county level, which, depending on how you believe it, that's the way it should be.
Yeah, goofy. I mean, how do you have consistency then for you guys?
Well, there is no consistency.
Or for anybody.
Right, but we're in California.
Yeah.
Very inconsistent
state.
We can't
spell that word. It's awfully long. Awfully long. You mentioned also, in addition to the cargo, some of the human stuff.
You know, right.
We've heard, it kind of makes sense, the human trafficking.
Oh, yeah.
To the dope grows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we heard the story earlier in the year, stories throughout the year of some of the either illegal, I guess illegal immigrants trying to come across the border, uh-huh, all getting kind of stuffed into a train or a truck or
there was
this
a huge incident in San Antonio a few days ago.
Yeah, a boat. You know, there's all. How prevalent is that stuff?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's more prevalent, in my opinion, than I think your regular person would think it is. It's, in my experience, it's scary. It is absolutely something that requires immediate and significant attention, especially when you're talking about a human being bought for a purpose of either labor or servitude, whether it be, you know, work-related or it might be sex-related. These are human beings we're talking about. And here in Humboldt County, from my experience, and this is my fourth area office throughout the state that I've worked in, it's worse here than anywhere I've ever seen before. The human trafficking, because in Humboldt County, the demand is so high, and there's always going to be supply, but that demand is higher, I think, in Humboldt County than in, let's say, some of these other counties. And a lot of that does have to do, admittedly, with the cannabis industry.
You're going PC with marijuana?
It's one of those kind of ancillary problems that occurs when there's a large demand for something, right? It could be carrots, it could be automobiles. In our case in Humboldt County, it's cannabis, right? Because it's not typically grown like a carrot is grown out in the open where people can drive by and see it. And so you have this culture that is established as a byproduct of where and how it's grown and by the people who are growing it, where there is a demand for humans to be trafficked.
Primarily Mexican? Kidnapping? People wanting to come to America? I mean, if you could have, and I know profile is another one of those anti-PC that are PC words that I don't recognize, but if you could get four or five primary features and try to say, these are the folks that get caught up into it.
That get trafficked?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't realize they are being trafficked initially, and that's another one of the problems. There are people that answer ads from, let's say, Mexico or South America or these other countries where America seems like a more prosperous place or more advantageous place than where they currently are. And they may think they're coming to work in a restaurant. They might think that they're coming to work on a farm, right? And then when they get there, suddenly there comes a time when they realize, this is a little different than what I thought I was going to do. And they may even start off in a restaurant. They might even start in a farm of some sort. And then it leads into, well, now I'm expected to do something else. Or I have to go home. Or I'm expected to pay all this money back, right? Because it costs a lot of money to get a person into the United States. And that's, you know, you think that you're going to pay this back, but you realize they want a different type of payback. There's a local agency called Game Over, run by Elle Snow. She's a wonderful woman who is really bringing this topic into the daylight for a lot of people. And through her personal experiences and also the experiences that she is kind of dug up by her own investigations, that is really, really just kind of letting all of us, even the law enforcement community, see just how huge this is.
Is it something that's visible that we're just not seeing?
You know, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is because it's a culture kind of unto itself. They have their own language. They have their own way of advertising. A lot of people like you and I aren't going to go into perhaps Backpage.com to look for an escort tonight. But there are a lot of people who will, and they know how to do that.
They will now.
They will now.
Thank you very much. KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop, a little bit different than what we normally do here. Victor Aguilar. Victor, the concept of human trafficking is so foreign for so many of us.
Right, right.
Servitude, okay, we can look back kind of in the Middle Ages and mm-hmm. the concept of apprentice. Okay, that is there, but it's certainly not what it was back then.
Right, right.
The referencing that you made in the last segment is more to that model.
Correct.
Than what we have today.
Yeah, you know, it honestly does run the gamut. You know, there are people who are in it, in other words, being trafficked, where people would say, well, why don't you just run? You know you're being trafficked. You know this isn't normal. But there's a psychological component that goes along with it. Where it's a psychological slavery, right? They could probably run at any time, but they don't. And that's sometimes when law enforcement gets involved, that's a barrier for us because sometimes we get called to these situations or we might pull a car over where people are just being transported from one location to another. And we know there's something going on, but because of, you know, our lack of experience that we talked about earlier, we can't really identify what exactly is going on. So then that's when we try to ask people, are you all right? Do you need help? Are you being kept against your will? And the problem enters when the people say, oh, no, we're just fine. He's my boyfriend or he's so-and-so. And they have this, I guess, alibi. That to us, it makes sense, but not really.
It feels funny still.
But it still feels funny. It doesn't feel right. But because of, you know, rules and something called the Fourth Amendment, we can't just say, hey, you know, I know there's something going on here. Therefore, I'm taking you out of this equation, whether you like it or not. That's kind of a difficult barrier for us to overcome where we need, in a lot of respects, for the victims to kind of give us a hand.
Any idea other than lots how prevalent it is here? I suppose lots would be a statistical reference. I mean, it still may not be tens of thousands of people.
You know, I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. I know that the demand is high here, higher than other geographical places just because of
the industry.
We are, right? But someplace like Kern County, where I worked before, it's a little different in there where you may not have as much of the sex trafficking, but you have a lot more of labor trafficking, right? People that pay some type of a fee to be brought to the United States with the understanding that they're going to work under the table or maybe illegally, in some type of fashion, usually harvesting or working on a plantation of some sort.
Are there folks like that, Victor, the gatherers that are, while it's illegal, but they're still ethical? 4 years, you'll be free. And that's a bond and an agreement, and they honor that? Or are most of these guys shady and, you know, if you've got relatives out of the area, you don't want them touching these folks?
I've heard of both scenarios being true, actually.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Yeah, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure.
See everybody tomorrow.